Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. Peter Phillips will join us again next week. On today's program, we are joined by investigative journalist Peter Byrne. We'll be talking about his 11-part series, Busted, Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. Peter Phillips will be back next week. We're joined today by investigative journalist Peter Byrne. Regular listeners to the show will recognize Peter Byrne. We talked to him last year about a new series published by Point Reyes Light in Northern California. Peter Byrne is a science writer, investigative journalist. He's won numerous journalism awards. This series is titled Busted, Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media, and it talks about the so-called breast cancer epidemic of Marin County. And Peter Byrne, well, basically breaks that myth wide open. And we're going to talk about this series today in more detail. Busted, Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media is the title again of this, and you can read this at pointreyeslight.com. That's PTREYESLIGHT.com. You can learn more about Peter Byrne at peterbyrne.info, spelled BYRNE. Peter Byrne, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thank you, Mickey.
Let's talk about this. Tell us what caused you to start writing this series.
For the last quarter century, people in the San Francisco Bay Area have been fed a steady diet of media headlines saying that Marin County, California, is the breast cancer capital of the world. It's been a little bit counterintuitive for folks because Marin is a very bucolic county. It's north of the Golden Gate Bridge. It's full of wealthy white people and Asian and Latino and some African Americans, but predominantly white. These people have access to good health care and are renowned for living healthy lifestyles. There's a lot of health food stores. People jog and take care of themselves. So it was a mystery to people why Marin County had the highest breast cancer incident rate in the world. Now, let me note that Marin County is not anomalous in this. There are other communities throughout the United States, Long Island, Cape Cod, Seattle, Shaker Heights, Ohio, Orange County, California, that have similar demographics and that are similarly thought to have very high breast cancer rates for white women. I've been in the Bay Area for 30 years, and I just accepted as almost a truism that for some inexplicable reason, wealthy white women in Marin County suffered more from breast cancer than women anywhere else in the world. I just thought it was weird. But I didn't look into it seriously until a number of years ago when I was writing a book on physics, and I had to learn some probability. And one of the examples of a certain type of probability function used the fact that after 10 mammograms, a woman is guaranteed to have a false positive. And something clicked in my head, and I thought, well, I wonder if that could explain these weird anomalous, you know, breast cancer rates in Marin. And so I started looking into it. I ended up having to read epidemiology textbooks. I talked to some of the leading epidemiologists in the Bay Area and around the country. I read literally hundreds of scientific papers, dug into it, took a number of years on the back burner. And then about a year and a half ago, I got a grant from the Fund for Investigative Journalism to support myself and the Point Reyes Light newspaper based in Marin County in West Marin to do a really in-depth look at this. And eventually, my editor, Tess Elliott at the Point Reyes Light, and I successfully launched the publication of Busted, Breast Cancer, Money in the Media in November. It just concluded on January 21st, which is an 11-part series. And it starts out by explaining the origin of the myth that wealthy white women get more breast cancer. The science shows us very clearly that the simplest explanation for wealthy white women being assessed as having more breast cancer is that they get more mammograms than other people, which is logical because they tend to have access to state-of-the-art health care, which concentrates on getting annual or biannual mammograms. And the way that that data makes itself present is that every time a cancer diagnosis is made in the state of California and in most states in the United States, the doctors or hospitals have to report that diagnosis to the cancer registry that serves their area. A cancer registry is, to make a long story short, an organization usually run by the state and in California actually contracted out to a series of nonprofit organizations to collect the diagnoses that are made of all sorts of cancers and to try and track the spread of these chronic diseases in a population. Unfortunately, their internal audits from the California Cancer Registry, which I obtained under the public information laws, show that the quality of the data in the registry is very suspect. It's almost a quixotic, intractable task to try and track the progress of a chronic disease in a population of millions of people. That's because not every doctor reports every diagnosis. In terms of breast cancer, there's a lot of false positives involved. I mean, every time a woman gets a mammogram, the chance is about 50% that there actually will be a false positive. And often people are treated on the basis of false positives. There's also the phenomenon of overdiagnosis, where women are treated for diseases that they don't have or for indolent cancers that never would progress to a lethal stage or a harmful stage. So the long and the short of it is that the more well-off a population is, the more access to screening mammography that population tends to have, and the more cancers will be registered, whether they're false positives or whether they're actual cancers or whether they're what is called ductal carcinoma in situ, DCIS, which is really just a cellular abnormality that could potentially become a cancer, but which is not a cancer and unfortunately is often treated as a cancer. So by looking into this, I was able to show that the statistics showing that there was an elevated incident rate for breast cancer in Marin did not actually indicate that they were elevated. What they indicated was that the women there were getting more mammograms than the populations of women that they were being compared to, say, in Los Angeles or the state average. Unfortunately, a series of studies were put out by organizations affiliated with the Cancer Registry beginning in the 1990s, the primary one being the Cancer Prevention Institute of California, which is based in Fremont here in the Bay Area. And these studies were claiming 37% increase in breast cancer from last year to this year for women in Marin. And those generated headlines in the San Francisco Chronicle along the lines of killer stalks Marin, wealthy white women, educated women targeted by breast cancer. Nobody knows why.
A very sensationalist kind of headlines attracting attention to this issue in the papers in the Bay Area particularly.
Oh, it's remarkable. If you actually read the studies, which I did, and obviously the reporters and editors at these media organizations didn't, they would start out by saying, we've detected a huge amount of breast cancer here. But then at the end of the paper, in the section on limitations, they would say, this could actually be explained by excess use of mammography, by people getting screened more here, because they are. But we just don't think it is.
Well, that's fascinating, because it seems that this is what you end up concluding after not only did you read hundreds of scientific papers and talk to dozens of experts about this over, you know, the past year, studied epidemiology textbooks. You know, you've been looking into this for quite some time. Starting with the fact here in your series, Busted, Breast Cancer Money in the Media, you say that 10% of all mammograms produce false positives. And you also start, I mean, right from the beginning, saying that the high rates of breast cancer screening explained the so-called cancer cluster, right, in Marin
right.
County and in several other more affluent cities and counties around the United States that you mentioned earlier. So you're saying that originally that hypothesis floated, but then it was discounted?
Well, the media only would focus on what they claimed was a fact, that women in Marin County were inexplicably getting more breast cancer than women anywhere else. And that was something that made nice headlines, but it didn't make good science. And the organizations that were promoting that, which was the Cancer Prevention Institute of California, the Public Health Institute based in Oakland, both those institutions have $275 million contracts with the National Cancer Institute to do their registry operations. They make a lot of money promoting the notion that wealthy white women get breast cancer, which parenthetically, there's a lot of breast cancer activist groups in the Bay Area and in Massachusetts and New York and elsewhere that also promote this notion that wealthy white women get more breast cancer. And I presume that that helps them in their fundraising drives.
So were public health specialists or experts, they weren't really fooled by this? Or there's a lot of money pushing this, number one. So there's reason for people to pursue or follow. And then individuals, of course, worry for their own health, right? Their own issues of mortality. So they're going to go out and maybe get tested. And of course, people with health insurance and medical insurance and, you know, more affluent background can get more tests, which seems to fuel the problem.
It's a feedback loop. Mm-hmm. If the media is promoting that you are more at risk of breast cancer than other women, you're going to go get that annual mammogram, and then eventually you're going to get a false positive, or you're going to be actually diagnosed with cancer, you know. So it fed on itself over the years, and at some point I decided to directly go to the experts, and I talked to people like Dr. Ofunmalayo Olapade, who is a MacArthur Genius Fellow and the head of a genetics institute at the University of Chicago and an expert on global breast cancer risk. And I asked her to look at all the papers that had been written by the Cancer Prevention Institute of California and the Marin Department of Public Health claiming that there was an elevated risk of breast cancer in Marin, which the press was calling an epidemic or a breast cancer cluster. And she had this to say.
Everybody has come to the conclusion that there's been overdiagnosis and overtreatment, and that's going to be more prevalent among, you know, highly educated, rich people who are going to adopt technology faster than, you know, people in the general population.
So do you think that, you know, there's this gap, at least in California, between, and I think it's national, between the high incident rates for well-off white women, but they have much lower mortality rates from breast cancer than people that are in different...
And that's because they were diagnosed with disease they didn't have. So there's all the overdiagnosis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's been reported in any time you have screening, you have overdiagnosis.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty remarkable. And you went out in the field and interviewed numerous people.
I went to probably a score of really well-respected scientists, including Kenneth Rothman, who wrote the textbook, Modern Epidemiology, that most epidemiologists in America studied in graduate school. And he confirmed what Dr. Olampale confirmed, that it was the high incident rates among populations of wealthy white women are an effect of getting more mammograms than the normal, more screening mammograms. I want to differentiate screening mammograms from diagnostic mammograms. If you feel a lump in your breast, you should definitely get a diagnostic mammogram. But remember that mammograms are X-rays, and they tend to mostly show microscopic types of abnormalities. I mean, if you already have a weeping lesion or a red area or pain in the breast, that could be the sign of a more advanced breast cancer. Mammograms, they're not useful for detecting that. In fact, mammograms are now shown to cause more harm than good, which is a whole other story that we talk about. But screening mammograms are a different matter entirely. They look for cancers among populations that don't have cancer. And when they find them, often those are anomalies, cellular anomalies that are not necessarily cancerous at all. So when you create statistics out of that, the cancer incident rates that emanate from a cancer registry are not actually counts of the number of cancers in a given population. They're extrapolations. To give you an example, Marin County has about 70,000 women over the age of 40 who would be at risk of some sort of breast cancer. But the way that the rates are calculated is per 100,000 women. So obviously, every time that there's an actual count of cases, by the time it makes itself into the registry data, it's increased by 30% because the calculations are done per 100,000 women. And if there aren't 100,000 women, then they just increase the number to meet that. But they're not an indication of risk. They're simply a snapshot at time of the number of diagnoses that have been submitted by medical practitioners to the cancer registry. It is not that these cancers are all actual, that some of them are not false positives, that probably one out of five diagnoses of breast cancer is thought to be overdiagnosis in our country, and unfortunately, most of those are also overtreated. So when you dig into what a breast cancer incident rate is, it's not what you think it is. And a lot of this confusion around breast cancer risk has to do with a notion that is very widely promoted, which is that 1 out of 8 women will get cancer. And that's not true. First of all, the 1 out of 8 figure, which would translate into about 12% of all women getting breast cancer, is a lifetime risk extrapolation. It's based on a woman living from the age of birth until the age of 100. Obviously, people die of a lot of other things in late life. So if breast cancer doesn't get you, something else is going to. So that's a little bit specious. But the most important thing about it is that it's a lifetime risk. So every year that you live, you reduce the amount of risk. I went to talk to Dr. Patricia Kelly, who is a very renowned geneticist and expert in breast cancer risk. She's written books on it and worked at Bay Area hospitals for 30 or so years, now retired. And she explained, because she lived up in the Berkeley Hills, up a kind of a steep road, she said, if you came up my road and you lived and didn't fall off the side of the steep cliffs that are on the side, I would tell you, well, you had a 1% chance of falling off the road on the way here, but you lived through it. So unfortunately, you now have a 1% chance of falling off the road on the way down. So when you started out your journey, you had a 2% chance of dying on your way to see me. But if you get back to the flatlands without falling off the road, you will have lived through that 2%.
We're speaking with investigative journalist Peter Byrne about his recent series, Busted: Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. It's an 11-part series published by The Point Reyes Light. You can learn more at pointreyeslight.com, and you can learn more about Peter Byrne at his website, peterbyrne.info. We will return to this conversation after a brief musical break. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. Today's show, we're joined by investigative journalist Peter Byrne. His recent work is titled Busted: Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. And when we left off, he was talking about this 1 in 8 chance through a lifetime that a woman will have of contracting breast cancer and dying from breast cancer. So, Peter Byrne, why don't you continue with that? You were talking about how the figures are misleading.
Well, the major risk of getting breast cancer is age. And the way that breaks down is that between the age of 0 and 50, women have a 2% chance of getting breast cancer or being diagnosed with it, which is not necessarily the same thing as getting it. Between the age of 50 and 70, women has a 6% chance. And after the age of 70, up to 100 or so, it's a 4% chance because you're going to die of other things. So the longer you live, the less chance you have of getting breast cancer in your life. But the older you are, the more at risk you are. It's kind of counterintuitive. I ended up making a really nice kind of chart that shows that in Busted Part 2 called Climbing Risk Mountain. But let's hear from Dr. Kelly. Here's a clip from our interview.
Risk has been used in scientific papers for a long time, and it's useful for scientists who are trying to weigh hypotheses and see if there is any difference and whether they can look at things more closely. But when you're translating it into a clinical use, let's say, instead of just a scientific use, then I think you have to be very careful and use absolute risk. I used to tell my patients, suppose I ask you if you would carry my grandmother's dog upstairs. Before you say yes, you'd be wise to ask, how big is it? And I say, oh, well, the dog is only twice as big as my neighbor's dog. Well, if my neighbor's dog is huge and my grandmother's dog is extra huge, you've gotten yourself into trouble. So in this case, that 20% increase, the difference from Marin from 1998 to 1999, saying, oh my goodness, this is, you know, the sky is falling, that's 39 women out of 100,000. If you want to compare Marin and San Francisco and in the Bay Area, they said it was 28% higher, which it was. But again, that's 44 out of 100,000. A difference of 4 out of 100,000. So what I called for years, and maybe you can get further than I did, is to say in a clinic situation when you're dealing with real people, just tell people how much my grandmother's dog weighs. That's what's important. And to me, it's a case-closed situation. Any difference that there is could easily be explained by better reporting in Marin, perhaps, poor reporting elsewhere, mistakes.
Overdiagnosis.
Certainly. I mean, again, you're going to expect women with more money to go to a doctor more often.
Which does not mean that there is something causing cancer in Marin that is endemic to Marin.
Not when you have a difference of 4 cases. I mean, if you're going to have something in Marin that's causing problems, it's going to do it to more than 4.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff, and I'm joined by investigative journalist Peter Byrne. We're talking about his 11-part series, Busted, Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. And I urge listeners to go online and read this amazing study that Peter did. It's The Point Reyes Light, and the website is PTREYESLIGHT.com. And you can see the 11-part series there with all of this information. The thing that's kind of riveting here is what we just heard. So, Peter Byrne, tell us a little bit more. What is your analysis of the interview we just heard?
Well, what Dr. Patricia Kelly, who's a renowned geneticist and breast cancer risk expert, leading expert in the country, was saying in that was the difference between relative risk and absolute risk. I'm going to explain that in more depth because it's really important, and it's how it explains how the media latched on to some of these scientific studies and caused hysterical reactions and a lot of people to be frightened into getting treatments that they possibly didn't need. If you have, say, 2 breast cancers in a population of 100,000 one year, and the next year you have 4. That's an increase of 2 cases, and that can be cast as 100% increase. But it's really only an increase of 0.02%. It is really insane for epidemiologists and reporters to translate data like that into relative risk factors, where they say, oh, there's a 50% increase or 100% increase or a 75% increase from one year to the next, when the increase is so small as to be actually statistically insignificant.
And the reporting is utterly irresponsible because there's no baseline necessarily given. There's no context set up, as we heard about the dog, right, mm-hmm. and the relative size of the dog right. carrying up the stairs. If you don't have that context, those numbers don't mean anything, really, but they certainly could cause somebody great alarm.
And they do. And the scientists that have done these studies that were picked up in the media and amplified in that sense, they know the difference between relative risk and absolute risk. But they choose to cast their findings in terms of relative risk because otherwise they would be meaningless and they wouldn't be worth funding, to tell you the truth.
Ah, so we're getting to the root of some of this business here, and the word business just came out of my mouth somehow. You actually call it the unseen stalker here based on the newspaper reports and the news headlines. I just wanted to read a couple of the headlines. From 2002, the San Francisco Chronicle had a headline titled, Unseen Killer Stalks Marin. Then there was another year later, another publication said, Breast Cancer Amid Affluence, High Rate in Marin County Appears Tied to Wealth Education. 10 years later, the Chronicle had a report that was titled Bay Area Breast Cancer Clusters Seen. KQED Public Broadcasting in the San Francisco Bay Area had a piece called Local Breast Cancer Clusters Seen. They titled that again. The Huffington Post weighed in. Marin County Breast Cancer Study reveals shockingly high rate of disease. Marin Magazine said that the county was known as the breast cancer capital of the world, which you mentioned earlier. But of course, as you note in your series, the problem with all the reporting is that there never was an epidemic of breast cancer targeting affluent white women of Marin County.
And the other problem is that in each one of those stories that you talked about, they only talked about incident rates. They didn't talk about mortality rates. Incident rates are not the same thing as risk. Risk is only something that you can look at over time. And mortality rates are considered to be the only meaningful endpoint in epidemiology of chronic diseases because that tells you very solidly if a person died of X or Y disease that they had the disease. Incident rates don't actually indicate whether they have the disease or not. So what you want to look at to determine the prevalence of a chronic disease or even an infectious disease in a population a lethal disease, is how many people die from it. Mortality rates are the end point that you look for. But these studies, while they would mention the mortality rates, glossed right by them. I shall, however, reveal them. The mortality rates for African-American women dying from breast cancer in America are 40% higher than for white women in general. Latino women, all women of color, women of lower economic scale, all have much higher mortality rates than people with access to superior, supposedly superior health care, which tends to be the more affluent people. So by framing these stories, one, in terms of relative risks, which is kind of meaningless, and in terms of incident rates as opposed to mortality rates, the scientists that gave rise to these stories as they appeared in the press, because they're all quoted in these stories year after year, in my opinion, have acted very irresponsibly. And the epidemiologists at the Marin Department of Health worked very closely with the epidemiologists at the Cancer Prevention Institute of California and the Public Health Institute and some people at UCSF on studies that literally sucked in tens of millions of dollars into their institutions.
And fear is a great motivator here for people to go and get these tests, which then jacks up the rate.
Well, that feedback loop, as we talked about before. But the truly horrible result of this is that research dollars that could have been looking at why African-American women are dying 40% more are not there. Latino women in Marin County, for example, don't get as many mammograms as white people. So their claim is that they don't have as much breast cancer, but that's absurd. If you look at mortality rates, they have higher mortality rates. And one of the problems with how this plays out is that I'll use the Marin Women Study as an example. This is a multi-million dollar, about a $5 million study financed by the Department of Health in Marin in partnership with the Avon Foundation for Women, which gave it $4 million.
Well, that's ironic in some ways, given...
Well, for a government agency to go and conduct and design a study according to the guidelines of a private institution run by a cosmetics corporation.
Which has been linked to carcinogens.
In the European Union, many of the ingredients in cosmetics are banned that are allowed here.
And we've covered those stories decades ago at Project Censored.
Yeah, this has been cadmium and all sorts of stuff is in lipstick that Avon sells. So they came waltzing into Marin County with a $4 million check, and they gave about $700,000 to Zero Breast Cancer, which is an activist group, supposedly, and conducted a study where they collected saliva samples from about 14,000 women that were getting mammograms in Marin, and they published three or four studies based on analysis of that saliva and analysis of an 80-page questionnaire that the women filled out. I talked to Dr. Cornelia Baines, who's a highly respected breast cancer epidemiologist in Toronto, Canada, and she looked at these studies and she said, garbage in, garbage out. And I'll tell you why. For example, the 81 questions that the women who were getting mammograms for the Marin Women Study had to fill out had questions on it like, have you ever been around pet flea collars or goats? Have you ever used hormone replacement therapy? There was one question that Avon-funded study didn't ask. What might that be, Mickey, do you think?
I'm wondering if it's, do you use any Avon products?
It didn't ask if people use cosmetics,
right?
Which was pretty much an omission. The other problem with that was that the saliva samples were given by women. They were instructed to, when they woke up in the morning before 11 o'clock, before they brushed their teeth, lost their teeth, or had any food, generate 2 teaspoons of saliva, which is, I couldn't, and put it into a plastic envelope and mail it back to the Buck Institute, which is a science nonprofit that was helping the Marin County Health Department do this. However, it turned out that most of the saliva was not very usable because it would have been contaminated by other bacteria, and there was no way to say that it actually was anybody's saliva anyway. It was scientifically unsoundly designed structure that, in fact, when they went out for funding later, funders wouldn't fund it on the basis that the saliva was not really acceptable in scientific terms as a medium that could be studied. But this is a lead up to the biggest problem with the study, which was that the three large studies that were done out of it deliberately excluded non-white women from the studies. Now, this was amazing to me when I found that out. First of all, in Marin County, non-white women make up 28% of the population. They get breast cancer just like white women. Non-white women includes Asian women, Latino women, et cetera, et cetera. Women living in Marin tend to have the same types of socioeconomic status. So they were, on the basis of race, excluding women that were otherwise similar from this study. And then race is a social construct. It has nothing to do with biology. If you're going to look at genetic causes of diseases, you have to look at the genetics of individuals' ancestry. African Americans, for example, have great admixtures of genetic streams. The National Cancer Institute, under the concept of race, has like over 100 different nationalities are considered to be white. Afghanis, Poles, Finns, Russians, Lithuanians, Californians, all these people are considered to be white, but they obviously all have vastly different gene pools if you trace their genetic ancestries. So to say that just because you're white, you have the same genetic structure is unscientific. To say that just because you're non-white doesn't mean that you wouldn't have genetic overlaps with people that are considered to be white is unscientific. And when I sat down with Dr. Matt Willis, the chief medical officer at the Marin Department of Health, and the two epidemiologists who were largely responsible for promoting this idea that wealthy white women are more at risk of breast cancer, Rochelle Ehrman and Leanne Preble. Many times I talked to them, but we sat down finally last summer and talked about this issue of race. And they basically ended up saying, well, if we had not used race as a marker, we couldn't have gotten published. To which my response, at least in my head, I didn't say it, was, oh, so you put your professional careers ahead of the public health of the people that you're sworn to serve. And however, Dr. Willis did say, and we're going to play this clip for you in a second, that he was glad that I had brought this matter of the inapplicability of race in studies of this nature for the following reason.
We're speaking with award-winning investigative journalist Peter Byrne. His recent series, published at The Point Reyes Light, is titled Busted: Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. We'll return to this conversation after a brief musical break. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. We're speaking with investigative journalist Peter Byrne. His newest series, Busted: Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media, is an 11-part series published by The Point Reyes Light. It's pointreyeslight.com. I urge listeners to read it there. When we left off before the break, Peter Byrne was talking about one of the many interviews that he conducted. We were talking about the issue of race in these studies. So, Peter Byrne, remind our listeners once again, what is the clip that they are about to hear?
The chief medical officer at the Marin Department of Health, Dr. Matthew Willis, was responding to my comment that race was not a valid marker in epidemiological breast cancer research. And he basically agreed and said,
your piece is going to help us as a society like move forward in terms of our understanding of, I mean, the reason things change is because people ask questions.
So I thought that was great because it showed that there was an open-mindedness to it. And I did run across many, many times in the course of this investigation scientists that were open-minded and willing to make self-criticism and were actually searching for the truth, not just for some, you know, pre-selected agenda. On the other hand, I ran across scientists such as Dr. Christopher Benz at the Buck Institute, who was much less forthcoming when he was asked the question of the role of screening mammography in creating breast cancer incident rates. And he had this to say.
We cannot explain the decline, the correlation and the decline in the use of HRT combined E+P and the decline in the incidence rate. We cannot explain that by some change in the screening incidence in this county.
Why not?
I'm sorry. I've gone beyond the time I can spend talking to you, and this is just no longer productive, and I'm not really interested in pursuing it in greater detail with you.
Very good. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Wow.
So there we have a spectrum of scientists. I mean, on the one hand, Dr. Willis, who's open-minded and willing to admit that perhaps some errors have been made. In fact, we invited Dr. Willis to be on the show.
You invited several people, actually, to join us on the program today, and none of them could join us. Matthew Willis wrote that it was good that you were getting a chance to share the story, but claimed that with such short notice, didn't think he'd be able to join. Went on to say that you have a good grasp of the facts you're using, but he declined to come on and discuss it with us on air.
He disagreed with some of the interpretation of the facts, which we'll get into in a second, because at one point, a notion that there could possibly be some explanation of this otherwise inexplicable breast cancer epidemic began to surface in the scientific papers that were being done by the County Health Department and the Cancer Prevention Institute of California. They blamed it on the use of hormone replacement therapy, which is a story that I tell in one of the parts of this series. And it's very important because even now, as the department is putting out publicity saying that there's no longer a breast cancer epidemic in Marin, they're claiming that the high rates were attributable to women there using more hormone replacement therapy than women elsewhere. Now, this is a really another kind of insane notion in that its origins were in 2002 when a huge $700 million study of women's health called the Women's Health Initiative stopped a breast cancer clinical trial where one cohort of women were given a placebo, the other cohort were given estrogen plus progesterone hormone replacement therapy. And they found after a number of years that 8 women in the hormone replacement therapy cohort out of 10,000 women had gotten breast cancer over a period of time. Now, this is actually statistically meaningless. It's 8 out of 10,000. It could be due to chance, and it's not proof of anything. But they stopped the study because their protocol said that if there was even the remote possibility that the substance they were administering could be harmful, that they had to stop it. And so they did. However, the media picked it up and started blasting out all over the world, thanks to the New York Times, that hormone replacement therapy causes breast cancer. And within a few short months, menopausal women all over America and the world stopped using estrogen plus progesterone hormone replacement therapy, choosing to suffer the symptoms of menopause because they were afraid that they would get breast cancer when the risk was not only not proven, it was theoretically kind of a red herring. Now, a few years later, a study was released in 2007 by a researcher at MD Anderson in Texas, Austin, Texas, at the university, named Peter Ravdin. He had done it in conjunction with Brenda Edwards, the chief epidemiologist at the National Cancer Institute. They had looked at the cancer incident rates for 2003, and they saw that the rates dropped by, I think, 7% in relative terms. Not that much in absolute terms, but 7% in relative terms from one year to the next. And Ravdin concocted this theory that the sudden drop in one year was due to all these women having gone off hormone replacement therapy. Therefore, hormone replacement therapy must have been causing or promoting breast cancer. I was on the story at that time, and I called up Dr. Edwards at the National Cancer Institute, and she talked to me at some length, and she was totally furious. Ravdin had released the findings of a paper that hadn't been published yet, and she thought and indicated that he was looking for publicity for it, which he certainly got. And she said that the results were statistically insignificant and that the drop in incident rates for 2003 was probably caused by less utilization of screening mammography. She also said that because of all the publicity that surrounded this, she was afraid that when the paper was published, which was due to be in April of 2007, that her caveats would not be included and that it would go on to make this specious claim. And indeed, that is what happened. So now medical professionals who rely on this type of science largely tend to think that hormone replacement therapy causes breast cancer, which is crazy. It doesn't.
How is this possible if they actually would then read the study and the caveats and so forth?
Because they don't read them. They don't understand statistics, a lot of medical professionals, and they just read the abstracts mm-hmm. of studies. Now, importantly, I did my own research on this. I went and I looked at the mammographic utilization rates for Marin County and indeed the entire country for 2003. And there's all these GAO reports at the federal level saying that mammography had been underfunded for 2003 and a lot of centers had closed around the United States, which brought down the rate of breast cancer. And in Marin, a huge number, like 10% of the women didn't get mammograms that year, 2003, which drove the incident rate down, obviously, because if you don't get a mammogram, you can't discover that type of cancer. One of the reasons that they didn't, and probably a lot of women in you know, Long Island and Shaker Heights, Ohio, and in New York City and Orange County, all these similar communities, didn't get mammograms that year. Well, it was, however, because of the fear around the Women's Health Initiative. Because they feared that they would get breast cancer from using hormone replacement therapy, they did go to their practitioners and get their prescriptions that year. Now, the requirement before you can get a prescription was that you had to get a mammogram. So if you weren't getting a prescription, you didn't get a mammogram. Hence, the rates went down. They came back up by 2005 and have been slowly rising ever since. But the dip from 2002 to 2003 in breast cancer incident rates, as reported to cancer registries, which are full of all the errors we've talked about, is attributable to people getting less mammograms during 2003. Nonetheless, this meme has become very powerful. And the people at the Marin County Public Health and at the Cancer Prevention Institute are now kind of pushed into a corner because the epidemic that they had been claiming was going to decimate Marin didn't. The mortality rates fell. They didn't increase, meaning there never was even close to an epidemic. So they actually blame the whole increase on people using hormone replacement therapy, and they buy into that whole notion because I guess it makes them feel that they weren't completely out to lunch and ignoring data that contradicted their hypothesis that were running their grant funding cycles. However, there is no scientific basis for that. And when Dr. Willis said that he disagreed with the interpretation of what I was putting forth, that was what he was referring to. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a last-ditch effort that's being made.
Well, Peter Byrne, we contacted scientists from half dozen organizations that you unmask in your series, Busted, including the California Department of Public Health. And they wrote you and said that they would be declining your invitation to come on this program. So I want to make sure that listeners know that not only did you go out and interview people and try to talk with a lot of these people, but we have consistently invited them to have public dialogue, debate, or discussion with you on this program. And I know you've had other opportunities to do so. And to date, I don't believe any of these people have met and had a discussion with you in a public forum about your series.
Well, the California Department of Public Health is in charge of the Cancer Registry, even though it contracts out its operation to these nonprofits. And they declined to make any of their scientists available to me for an interview ever. The Cancer Prevention Institute of California allowed me to interview Christina Clark, who was the lead epidemiologist. And we're going to hear a clip from her in a few minutes. When I first started this investigation, after they realized that it might be critical of them, they declined to talk to me. The Public Health Institute, which had gotten $200 million over a 10-year period for running the data operations of the Cancer Registry, declined to talk to me after they realized that it might be critical. However, because the California Department of Public Health is subject to California Public Records Act, I put in public records requests to get the internal audits that the Cancer Registry was obligated to do every so often on the quality of its data. They resisted me tremendously, but ultimately had to cough up about 30 or so audits, which are linked to and available on the online version of Busted Breast Cancer in the Media. If you're reading the stories on the Cancer Registry, all the audits are described and the links are there to the actual materials. And it's horrifying. I mean, basically, they're describing invasive breast cancers as indolent and indolent breast cancers as invasive. They're missing huge percentages, 25-30% of cancers that exist are not picking up other cancers. I mean, if you go and you read it for yourself, you'll just be shocked. And it clearly shows that the data that it's in the Cancer Registry is not really fit for research purposes, which would not be surprising to some scientists. There were papers that I uncovered. There was one in 2003 by Dr. Jennifer Mallon of UCLA, who basically did an investigation of the California Cancer Registry instead of the public, and the HMO providers knew how poor the quality of the data was, they would be shocked and outraged, and there would be a public scandal.
This is a pretty big issue that people who ought to know better, they perpetuate this myth. Is it for financial reasons, professional advancement? I mean, but this kind of expose that you're doing in this series, I mean, at the very least, it has to be embarrassing to these people, which is why they don't want to talk to you, I imagine.
But a lot of people did. On the other hand, there was Dr. Alice Whitmore at Stanford University who wrote a paper in 2003 saying there is no breast cancer epidemic in Marin. it's excess mammography, and it's a more of a psychological issue than it is a scientific issue, she said, because it speaks to the ability of people to irrationally hold on to a belief that is contradicted by the data, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So there were actually plenty of scientists that were calling it out. But, you know, in the community of epidemiology, first of all, it's kind of a closed community. They have their own jargon. You know, I learned how to speak it, which is how I was able to deconstruct all this. But, you know, most reporters can't. And they all sit on each other's funding committees, mm-hmm. and they co-author papers. And so the tendency is to keep quiet when you spot something that's not going well, you know, or that's not true, or maybe even that's a lie, you know. And that's how this kind of roles, you know, until people are questioned, they kind of gravitate towards, I guess, where their careers are most well greased. And Christina Clark of the Cancer Prevention Institute of California, which we have a clip we'll play for you in a minute, has been one of the primary authors saying that there was this elevated risk of breast cancer in Marin, that maybe it seemed to be due to hormone replacement therapy. And in one famous paper, she and other epidemiologists from the Department of Health in Marin claimed that Marin County was the canary in the gold mine. The usual phrase is canary in the coal mine, but they said gold mine, right? Which indeed it was.
Wow.
And they were claiming that year that women in Marin had 37% increase over a one-year period in breast cancer. It turned out they had bad data, and it was actually only a 15% increase, which is attributable easily enough to excess mammography. But I went and interviewed her on video and tape in 2014. I mean, here's the person who has been claiming there was an epidemic all this time. After asked her if there was still an epidemic, she had this to say.
Is it possible that the excess seen in Marin County was an artifact of mammography? I mean, basically said that it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility.
Can you assign that like a 10%?
No, I can't put a number on that, but there's no question that better and perhaps more intense mammography could have played into that pattern and could still be playing into that pattern, to your point.
Because it detects more cancer, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Peter Byrne, what do you make of that?
My mouth fell open when I heard it. I mean, because even prior to that conversation, she had still been claiming that wealthy white women got more breast cancer and that there had been a public health problem in Marin because of this. And then suddenly she flipped and said that. And interestingly enough, you know, like I said, the Cancer Prevention Institute and the Department of Health now claim that the epidemic is over.
The epidemic that wasn't.
The epidemic that wasn't is over. And the claim is made because they said that, first of all, let me explain to you that epidemiology is useless for small populations like even a quarter of a million, which is the number of people in Marin, but there's only 120,000 women. And when you're collecting data for small populations, it's so explainable and confounded by randomness and by other explanations that it's very difficult to pinpoint the cause of anything. And epidemiology is not supposed to pinpoint causes. It theorizes what causes might be, and then you go out in the field and you look for it. You look for the patient zero for Ebola or the water tap with cholera coming out of it. But the way this came down over 25 years here in the Bay Area was just theory combating theory. Nobody actually went out and looked for causes because there was no epidemic. There was no cancer cluster. So how could they? But they kept the myth going. But recently they came out and said it was over because from last year to this year, the rate in Marin for breast cancer had declined. So it must be over. And, you know, I actually wrote this up as part of Busted, and I also tried to talk to Dr. Clark about this because I wanted her to explain to me several things. First of all, when she says that the rate in breast cancer dropped from 1 year to the next, that's comparing apples to apples. If you're trying to figure out if one population has an excess of a disease over another, you have to compare two different populations. You have to compare apples to oranges, which she didn't do in this paper and which the Marin Department of Health went along with. She just said that there was a fall in the rates from 1 year to the next, which is completely meaningless because if you actually go and look at the data, which I then did, you see that rates of breast cancer in California have been falling over the last decade due to a number of reasons, people giving up smoking, for one thing, due to the fact that screening saturation, which is where populations are screened for breast cancer and they find a lot of the breast cancers and then they run out of breast cancers to find, and so the numbers drop. That probably explains this drop universally in California. But the drop in Marin was mirrored by the drop in the rate for the average Californian woman, which she didn't bother to mention. The Marin rate was still higher than the California average women, and that is explained by the fact that something like 90% of women over 40 in Marin County are now getting mammograms, when like 10 years ago it was 60%. they're still running on fear of getting more mammograms. Their incident rates are still pumped up. And there's still no epidemic.
And so we're back to that feedback loop. We're speaking with award-winning investigative reporter Peter Byrne. His latest series is titled Busted: Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. We'll return and conclude our interview with Peter Byrne after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. Peter Phillips will be back next week. Today, we're speaking with award-winning investigative reporter Peter Byrne. You can learn more about Peter Byrne at peterbyrne.info, B-Y-R-N-E. His latest series is titled Busted: Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. It's published by Point Reyes Light. You can read the 11-part series online at pointreyeslight.com. That's PTREYESLIGHT.com. Peter Byrne, you spoke with a number of experts. You spoke, too, with a number of women who were patients. And you had some dealings, of course, as they did, with the California Department of Public Health. Could you share a few stories about that?
Well, the series is framed by the stories of two different women. The first part is Renee Willard's story, and she was a scientist who actually done breast cancer research who lives in Marin, and she was diagnosed with ductal carcinoma in situ in 2007, and she got lumpectomy, which is a very painful kind of biopsy experience, and repeated lumpectomies, actually, trying to debate whether or not to get a mastectomy. And it's widely thought that DCIS is not cancer and should not require radical treatment. But some women are living in such fear that it could progress to be a cancer that the standard of care has been mastectomy or chemotherapy and radiation. And Renee ultimately got a mastectomy. And the pathologist reviewed the breasts that had been cut off and told me that she could find no sign of cancer. Now, Renee then put in a request to the California Cancer Registry for the abstract of her medical records, because you're allowed to get them. If you go to their website, you can get your own. And when it came back, we reviewed it. I had all the coding manuals, and we decoded it. And it had claimed that she had had an invasive cancer. So there was an invasive cancer chalked up to Marin that appeared in the statistics that wasn't an invasive cancer, that wasn't even a cancer. Another woman that I interviewed, calling her Abigail Adams because she doesn't want her name revealed, tape recorded many of her encounters with her medical practitioners and had all of her medical records. And it was kind of horrifying to hear these oncologists based in Marin advising her to get double mastectomies and all this really expensive treatment for what turned out to be another DCIS. It wasn't an invasive case. She sent away for her California Cancer Registry abstract, and we compared it to her medical records, and it was just full of errors. I mean, it was calling a cancer that wasn't a cancer.
Well, and Peter Byrne, isn't it now also, I'm not sure if we could call it a trend per se, but certainly the news media, the corporate media has been reporting about celebrities getting alleged preventative surgery, like getting mastectomies
Angela Jolie done a public disservice. I mean, first of all, the BRCA gene is not actually something that only Ashkenazi Jewish women have. The mutation of the gene, which is associated with a very, very, very small risk of breast cancer, very, very small, I have to say. Actually, African-American women have much greater ratios of that gene. So if anybody was going to be at risk, it would be African-American women. And last I looked, Angela was not African-American. But women are getting preventative double mastectomies, and this is studies have been done about this. I refer to them in a part of my series called The Perils of Mammography, based on this kind of publicity and pseudoscience, and it's terrifying.
Well, Peter Byrne, I also want to say here, we've been talking about this for the show, you're not in any place in the series, or nor are we here making light of breast cancer or the fact that people do develop breast cancer.
It's a horrible disease.
Of course. And so this is definitely not the angle, because I know some people will criticize what's going on here and with your work, saying that you're downgrading this or you're trying to belittle this problem, which you're not doing in any way. You are, however, saying that particularly this sort of industry around cancer treatment and the corporate media have really fueled more and more tests, which has jacked up the rate of detection. Some of these are false positives, right? But the point is that we're back to that feedback loop problem once again. So you're criticizing that whole phenomenon, right?
If anything good comes out of this series, it will be that women who read it and discuss it have a deeper understanding of what breast cancer risk is, how it's manufactured, what cancer incident rate statistics mean, and then people will be better informed when faced by a diagnosis. I would suggest that people might learn never to trust one pathological report, because 20% of all pathological reports on breast cancer are known to be false positives. Get two or three. Think about DCIS and what that means. And also be realist. I mean, actually, a really lethal cancer is a really lethal cancer. Our bodies have reservoirs of cancer, most of which are indolent, and unless we live to be 200, will never harm us. This is not to downplay the cancer is a terrible disease of industrial society, and that we should spend as much public resource as we can on figuring out how to limit its ability to attack us, which obviously means limiting the number of carcinogenic chemicals that are in the environment, because there's a term floating around now, and there's indeed a great book written by Dr. Ted Shetler at the Commonweal called The Ecology of Breast Cancer. It's an ecological phenomena. It's not a war, a cold war. It's not an enemy to be slain. It's an ecological phenomena that's to be understood by the interplay of all these nonlinear forces in the environment and in society.
Peter Byrne, you were dealing with a broad array here of both, you know, institutions, individuals, scientists, patients, and so on. One in particular, I recall, it was the California Department of Public Health. You really kind of seemingly put them into a corner and had an interesting exchange with them, and you ended up getting access to public records of email conversations that they were having about you.
They were stalling my public records request for the internal audits. It took me like 6 or 7 months to get those records, and they should have been divulged within a week. You know, they were all electronic, and they were there. But ultimately, I got them. And I then, very slyly, put in a public records request for all the emails at the department discussing my public records request. Ultimately, they rolled out 3,000 pages of emails, and they were not just between high-ranking officials at the Department of Public Health. They were between high-ranking officials at the National Cancer Institute, the Center for Disease Control, the nonprofits that were contracted to do this, the Cancer Prevention Institute of California, the Public Health Institute, the various arms of the registry. And they were like trying to figure out ways not to give me these audits. They were trying to figure out if they could find the audits, because they kept mysteriously disappearing. And at one point, a high-ranking official at the Department of Public Health said in an email to his colleagues, maybe we could approach the owner of the Point Reyes Light and try to cut a deal of some sort, because Mr. Byrne has connected the dots with the internal audits. I love that, connected the dots. Usually that's a conspiracy theory, you know,
yeah.
And I avoid it. But when I see that the high-ranking officials at the level of the State Department of Health say I connected the dots, I was like, okay, we'll print that.
We've been speaking for the hour today with award-winning investigative journalist Peter Byrne. The series is called Busted: Breast Cancer, Money, and the Media. You can read it at pointraiselight.com. You can learn more about Peter Byrne at peterbyrne.info, B-Y-R-N-E. Peter Byrne, thank you for your very important work, and thank you for joining us once again on the Project Censored show today.
All right, Mickey, thanks a lot.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaigns.
You're tuned to the Project Censored show on Pacifica Radio. Special thanks to our producer, Anthony Fest, our engineers, Erica Bridgman. The Project Censored show airs on over 25 stations around the United States. Archives can be found online at projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, where we link the radio show every week. We'll see you next time.